meeting will come to order. Good morning.
This is the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee for November 19th, 2009. Our main focus this morning is safety, but in addition to and before regular reports, we're going to devote, and what I expect will be most subject of this meeting, to the issues involving the Tri-State Oversight Committee, its relationship to WMATA, current issues, and hopefully also future issues. We're fortunate this morning to have with us the chairman, and I believe also the vice chairman of the Tri-State Oversight Committee. I'm going to turn to them in a moment. The Tri-State Oversight Committee is a body about which I think few people a couple of weeks ago had ever heard. And by few people, I mean not only those in the general public, but frankly, those who serve on bodies like the Metro Board. We may have had some vague awareness. Some members here, like Mr. Linton, who was FDA administrator at the time it was created, undoubtedly knows a great deal more. But many people could have come and served here, and I will hazard a guess that we have had colleagues who came, served on this board, and left without ever hearing the name Tri-State Oversight Committee, and certainly without ever actually interacting with it in any way. I don't believe ever before this morning we've had actually a face-to-face meeting with members of these two bodies. And I think given that the obvious tremendous concern and focus on safety in the rail system this year, it's time we did, both so that they can do their job and so that we can be in a better position to do our job. So I'd like to thank Mr. Madison for joining us. I'm going to turn it over to you to start with and ask you to, you know, tell us obviously anything that you wish to say, but in particular, if you could give us just a, you know, a little overview of what you do, how you do your work, and then we get into questions that go specifically to recent issues that have been raised. I think it's important everybody kind of understand, you know, what your job is and how you go about doing it. Let me say, finally, by way of introduction for those who don't know, this is a body that was created as a result of the what's called ICE-T, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 1991, although it didn't come into being until about 6 years later as a result of subsequent federal regulations that established state safety oversight committees for agencies like this around the country, as a result of which there are something like, I think, 27 of them around the country. And this happens to be our state safety oversight committee. Of course, we have the complication of not being in a state, but being in three states, which is why it's the Tri-State Committee, and which I think is also some of the source of some particular difficulties that they may have in doing their job. And with that, Mr. Madison, good morning.
Good morning. Say good morning to everyone. My name is Eric Madison. I'm an employee of the District Department of Transportation, but I also serve as the chair of the Tri-State Oversight Committee. We are a body made up of six members from each of the three jurisdictions. We were created in 1997 through a memorandum of understanding between the states of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia that basically set out the requirements to designate two members from each jurisdiction to serve on the committee. We do have the unique distinction of being the only state safety oversight in the country that has jurisdiction within three jurisdictions, so that provides some unique challenges for us. Primarily, we are tasked with the overseeing the safety program for the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, and we work primarily with the safety office here through what's called corrective action plans, hazard incidents resolution matrix, to bring about to make sure that the safety program here is being followed and that they're adhering to the federal guidelines. Most of what we do is the regulation is required that we carry out what's called, I guess, a cooperative agreement between the state safety oversight and the rail transit agency. So unlike the Federal Railroad Administration, we are unable to levy civil penalties or fines against the transit agency. So what we primarily try to do is work with the safety office to bring about a resolution to any safety issues that may arise. We came here today just to basically give a little bit of an overview of kind of how we function, what our primary goals are, and kind of some of the challenges that we've been facing recently. I have with me today Mr. Matt Bassett, who is my co-chair from the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transit. So we will be happy to answer any questions that you may have for us. If you'd like to add anything.
Sure. My name is Matt Bassett. I have the unique distinction of being the longest-serving TOC member, at coming in just a little bit over 3 years, which should give you an idea of the fact that TOC membership, as does employment with a lot of state agencies, tends to move around a little bit. The TOC program is very document-driven. As you know, we were created in 1997 under a memorandum of understanding, and our responsibility is to implement a federal regulation known as 49 CFR Part 659. 659, in turn, sets out standards for us as the State Safety Oversight Agency, as it does in 26 other states, to implement an oversight program that covers both the transit agency's system safety efforts, but also system security. And that leads us to develop a document called a System Safety Program Standard. The standard sets out requirements for those plans that, in this case, WMATA, but in my previous experience when I worked for the Maryland Department of Transportation, the Maryland Transit Administration was required to establish their system safety and security plans in accordance with our standard. And of course, we are responsible for conducting audits to ensure that their safety and security efforts, whether it be here where the TOC's only jurisdiction is over WMATA, we don't have any jurisdiction over other transit agencies, we are responsible for conducting audits on a three-year basis to ensure that the transit agency's actual efforts are in conformance with what they say in their plan. We also are responsible for evaluating accident and incident investigation reports that meet a certain reportability threshold, which is laid out in the federal regulation. We're responsible for approving the probable cause of those accidents, and the thresholds are that any incident resulting in transport away from the scene or two or more people on rail transit control property, any death within 30 days of an incident on rail transit control property, $25,000 more worth or more of damage to anything on rail transit control property, as well as any evacuation for life safety reasons or any collision on the right-of-way between a revenue vehicle or non-revenue vehicle or any combination thereof, as well as any mainline derailment. We're responsible for approving the probable cause of that accident. We're also responsible for approving any corrective action plans the agency may develop. And as Eric mentioned, corrective action plans are, we track them, and as well as we track open incidents and open hazards that WMATA submits to us. The important thing to note is that this is not designed as a traditional regulatory model. My understanding, not being an attorney myself, is that the State Safety Oversight Program was designed as a cooperative effort, mostly because since most transit agencies, this one being an exception, do not cross state lines, it was not practicable for the federal government to regulate something that did not constitute, on most part, interstate commerce. Therefore, under the General Welfare Clause, I believe that was how FTA was incorporated originally as UMPTA, and now they obviously FTA. So that's a little bit more detail simply on how we function and what our everyday operations are.
So I think that historically part of the reason for this is that until Race of UMPTA, until the 60s, the federal government hadn't had any involvement in a local subway. And so, beginning in particular with Metro and then the funding of a few other systems, it was a new thing. And I think there was a conscious effort to keep the federal government out of doing it at that point. In perhaps because at that point it would have been controversial with many places that had not received no federal funding. It was a different era. But I think you described kind of what the situation is. Let me ask you, you have six members and you have alternates. At least the Virginia side, there are alternates. I noticed in the list there aren't alternates in the other cases.
No, we did have alternates for the district, but that person has left, and I'm not sure if Maryland had.
Okay. And you said that the senior person who is here with us has served 3 years. So there's typically a fair amount of turnover.
Yes.
How many staff people does the Tri-State Oversight Committee employ?
We actually don't employ any staff members. What we do contract out for consulting services through Transportation Resource Associates. So we use them for any kind of technical assessments that need to be done. But primarily, the core of the committee is made up of the six committee members.
And the members are people who have other jobs?
Yes, with the exception of Mr. Bassett, who is the only TOC member, I believe, who was hired exclusively for doing state safety oversight. The other TOC members do have other responsibilities.
So Virginia's chosen to dedicate you to this purpose.
That's correct.
But all the other members are people that have to go back to their desks and do something else.
Yes.
What do they typically do? I mean, you know, in terms of their variety of...
It's a range of responsibilities. My role at DDOT is a transportation planner, so I'm working on other transit-related projects. Marilyn, a representative, she works on state safety oversight, but primarily for the Baltimore Light Rail system and their subway system. The other Marilyn member also works primarily for safety related to the Baltimore transit system. And Mr. Smith, our DC representative, works in the Office of Risk Management for DDOT, working on mostly homeland security issues, that sort of thing.
And you have zero staff people?
Correct. That's not, yes.
So you get some funding for consultant help?
Yes, we do have a budget of $500,000 for consultant services. That's split up of $150,000 per jurisdiction. That's renewed every year. So that covers the cost for our covering consultant services, but that's the only other cost we have.
Say that again. So it's, you said it was $150,000 per jurisdiction?
Yes.
Meaning Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. are each kicking in $150,000?
Yes.
And with that, you have to do everything?
Pretty much.
And basically, that's going to a consultant who's on call?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there a website?
Yes, we do have a website. It is actually housed on the DDOT website, so I can provide you with the link.
That'd be good. And so on that website, would we find documents? You made reference to, or Mr. Bassett did, to a, was it system safety and security?
The WMATA system, on that website, it's already posted. The Memorandum of Understanding, which incorporates us, is on there, and that also includes on the website. Unless I'm greatly in error, and I'm fairly confident we do have our system standard out there.
Yes.
If it's not up there, there's no reason it shouldn't be up there. WMATA's Security and Emergency Preparedness Plan, which we evaluate, is a security-sensitive document, so obviously that's in their custody, and we're not in a position to distribute that, nor would we recommend
it. Some things can be.
Their System Safety Program Plan is, again, that's a WMATA document as well, which we're responsible for evaluating and assessing, but not something that we would keep in our custody or share with the public. That would be their decision.
Apart from those things that are security-sensitive, but in general, documents that you produce are accessible that way through the website, or?
Not at this time, only because we're housing it on the DDOT website temporarily. We're actually doing some research to find a more permanent website where we can put more information. But because of the requirements for the DDOT website, there's only so much information that we can put up there. So we're trying to put more stuff up there, but for right now, it's just being housed on the DDOT website as a temporary basis until we can find a more permanent location and set up our own website.
Okay. What are the general questions about the Tri-State Oversight Committee, aside from Mr. Grant?
I just like a clarity. You say you have only the one staff person. What is your relationship? You said you also do your consultant in order to do the administrative or technical work that supports you. Is that correct?
Right.
Use of consultant?
Yes.
I think the thing that's important to note, to accurately answer your question, is that the Tri-State Oversight Committee is not an independent body the same way the WMATA board is, and it's not created by an interstate compact the way the authority is. The Tri-State Oversight Committee is essentially a working organization of three different state agencies from three different jurisdictions. So none of them are, quote-unquote, directly employed by the TOC, simply because they're all employed by their home agencies. And I happen to not have... this happens to be my primary job duty. Other folks throughout the committee have different amounts of effort that they are assigned to provide to the committee from their home agency. The TOC doesn't provide direct know, funding, for example, those $150,000 coming from each agency are coming from those agencies. They're getting administered by the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments and, you know, on our behalf. So to say, you know, we have, I would try to clarify the statement that we don't have staff. I mean, I'm full-time. I think Eric, you know, probably feels that a lot of, you know, a lot of his time he spends dealing with this. I know that, you know, all the jurisdictions are exploring ways to, you know, perhaps hire more people to do full-time work on the TOC, but that...
You did interject a piece that I thought I had heard and wanted clarity, and that was the Council of Governments really kind of serves as a host place for some of that interrelationship of administrative work. And when you set a contract, I was wondering, did you do that? Or did the council do that? And who answers the phone when somebody says, I'm calling to talk to the TOC? You know, where is that?
They don't, the phone does not ring at TOC when
we... So we wouldn't have known anyway.
Yes, but they do serve as our administrative agent when it comes to procurement of consultant services.
Mr. Graham, followed by Mr. Litton.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you both for being here today. I do have some basic questions about the TOC that I'd like to better understand, because in light of the recent events, I reviewed the statute that was passed by the Congress of the United States. And we have an unusual situation in that if we were a transit system operating entirely within a state, the Congress has charged the state with designating an agency other than the transit system to be the oversight body. But since we operate in several jurisdictions, there's a special provision which requires, that we may agree to designate one agency of one state. In other words, we could have designated the Department of Transportation in the District of Columbia, or an agency representative of all states to implement the requirements of this part. So apparently what we've done here is chosen the latter approach, and in effect, kind of created a new agency. That it's a new agency without really much visibility or resources or sense of permanence, or, you know, even an agency without its own website, apparently. So I'm not sure that, as I look at the statute here, I'm not sure that that is really achieving, just at the very outset of this discussion, what Congress had in mind, although we have at least distributed the responsibility through several jurisdictions. Most of this statute, and it's quite a lengthy statute, by the way, I commend it for your reading. It's 7 or 8 pages. Requires the state oversight agency, which is the term of art, to establish standards for rail safety and security practices and procedures to be used by rail transit agencies within its purview. And then what follows, and you know I'm not going to read all of this, although I'm tempted to, is this many pages detailing what that plan should provide. Now, are you saying to us that that plan is in place?
Yes, we have a document that was developed. It's called the Program Standard, and that's typical for all state safety oversight agencies. They all develop a program standard that basically lays out to the rail transit agency what its requirements will be in fulfilling its requirements under 659.
No, but expressly here, have you established rail safety and security practices?
Well, yes.
Yes. And may I ask a question of our general manager? Mr. Cato, are you aware of the rail safety and security practices that have been established by the TOC?
Yes.
Are we in compliance with those standards?
We are in compliance. I think their job is to review us every 3 years to make sure that we remain in compliance and to notify us when, in their judgment, we are not.
So that you can assure us that we have reviewed this standards for rail safety and security practices and all these pages of requirements, and you've reviewed all of this, and you can assure us that all of this is the subject of compliance by this agency?
If I might add, yes, sir. Formerly, I was with the Federal Transit Administration as the director of the Office of Safety and Security, and in that position, I, too, was in charge of the 28 state safety oversight agencies. And so all the things that Mr. Madison and Matt Bassett talked about, the federal law was applicable to the Federal Transit Administration, and the direction was to those state agencies with respect to coming up with a plan. That plan was directly given to the 48 transit agencies that had some form of rail. And so each transit agency must be in compliance with that, and if in fact the absence of that, that's where corrective actions or things that are brought to the Federal Transit Administration from that particular state safety oversight.
Right, well, I'm just about finished here, but for this phase, because I think this is just general questions about the TOC rather than specific questions, right, and I want to limit myself just to the general questions, is that there is in fact a sanction in the statute for noncompliance. And that is the administrator of the FTA may withhold up to 5% of the amount required to be distributed of federal funds. So there is a sanction available. I just want to say in conclusion that in anticipation of this session today, I wasn't sure whether this plan had been established, so I went to try to find it. And now I understand why I couldn't find it, because if it exists, it's in the DOT, the D.C. Department of Transportation website. So I asked staff to go and find the plan so that, I don't know whether other members wish to see a copy of it or not. It seems to me to be very relevant to this board and to this authority's operations. So I hope to have that from staff. Mr. Cato, perhaps you can help facilitate this so that we can see from the DDOT website what the plan is and when it was established. Just in conclusion, you may be the longest-serving member, but this has only been operational since 2005, the way I read it. So it's not an agency that has been.
If I could actually clarify the 650, yes, 659, right. That current draft of it right. has been in place since 2005. The initial draft of it, I believe, came out a few years earlier. I'm not specific, right. but 97.
Similar,
97.
And so there was a TOC from 1997?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know how many of our board members here have heard TOC mentioned. I've been on this board for you're 12 years, Mr. Zimmerman. I'm just a few weeks short of 11 years, and I have to confess, mea culpa, that I have not heard the term TOC mentioned in memory. And I'm a fairly regular, faithful attendee at these sessions.
I think you've made the point. Mr. Litton and then Mr. Ewell.
Well, I guess I probably have the most intimate knowledge of this particular agency and its creation, since I was the FTA administrator at the time that Congress gave us the opportunity to do this. A couple things I want to note, and as many of you are aware, there are both legislation being proposed and proposals from the administration to deal with safety oversight. One of the challenges that we had when this legislation was adopted in ICE-T and presented to us as something to administer was a real dilemma, because unlike FRA, we don't have authority, or FTA didn't have authority, legislative authority, to in fact both have sanctions as well as direct responsibilities for rail and safety oversight. And that is still a challenge, even as both the administration and the Congress set forth opportunities to change that. The other thing that was pretty clear is that we also didn't have the staffing. One of the things that is also going to be a challenge for the Congress and the administration is going to be what kind of staffing or level of staffing that's going to be provided. Some of you may or may not know that as a federal agency, FTA has a small amount of staff. And in fact, what FTA often does is hire contractors to do project management oversight. So because they don't have the staff and the breadth to actually oversee projects for development, construction, and the like, And also sort of its own financial management oversight is done through contractors. Also, some of the safety oversight is done through contractors. So one of the challenges is going to be, if the FTA gets new authority, what kind of staffing level is going to be provided. The other challenge that we had with the legislation that the Congress provided with state safety oversight was that all states weren't similar in terms of their responsibilities, their existing rail systems, and so it was kind of a hodgepodge of giving these states the authority to designate, as Mr. Graham stated, who would be responsible. In Pennsylvania, it was the PUC, the Public Utility Commission. So various states used various different arms to actually set up the state safety oversight. As you hear legislation being talked about, some of the challenges that existed then still exist now, which is going to have to wade through. What kind of staffing level? What kind of authority? And it's clear from the fact that many of you were on this board and didn't know that the State Safety Oversight Office existed, that is also something that may be prevalent across the state, across the country. So there's clearly some challenges here, and they too don't have staffing, nor do they have, other than one gentleman who mentioned that he's been dedicated from his state, but there's not the kind of real authority, clear guidelines, and then you allow each state safety oversight establish its own standards, which is also unlike any place else in federal government, because you have uniform standards for FRA, for NHTSA that does safety within the Department of Transportation. So there are a lot of hodgepodge kind of approaches to this that both the legislation allows and the conflicts within federal law permits. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done there, but it's going to require some major reevaluation of what the federal government wants to do, and quite frankly, also providing the resources to make sure it's done both uniformly, is staffed up, and there's clear guidance in terms of what the expectations are and some federal standards. So I think all of that kind of builds to the challenges that we have seen with our own state safety oversight trying to respond to issues here within this tri-state.
Those are good points, and I hope we'll be able to get into in more detail on sort of the third part of this.
Mr. Simon, I just have one quick relevant question to Mr. Madison. Could you say your name again?
Bassett.
Bassett. Okay.
Bassett.
I wasn't going to say that because I've heard Graham Cracker too long to say that. That's probably more than you wanted to know. But anyway, have you found, here now we have, the reason why it wasn't on the, wasn't readily available, it's not on the website. Not on the website. This is the, where is it? This is the website. This is the rail fixed guideway systems state oversight, this document. So there's no link to this on the website. But the final question I had for present purposes is, you're obviously familiar with this document, Mr. Madison.
Yes.
Have you found that Metro WMATA is in compliance of this document?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for being here. I'm certainly learning a lot more about what this is all about. A couple of questions. You've mentioned the $500,000 funding and then three jurisdictions, roughly $150,000 each. With everyone going through very tough budget restraints right now, and just read in the paper this morning about VDOT having to cut another $46 million, I believe it was, from their budget, what impacts, if any, do you think this will have in terms of the three states continue to fund this initiative?
Well, I don't know, I can't speak for Virginia and Maryland, but I can speak, say, for the district. Our challenge has been to consistently identify the funds each year. Unlike, I think, Virginia, you have a line item
or Maryland has a line item in their budget every year that just, so it just goes through, but the district does not. So usually about every spring or summer, we start going around and, you know, meeting with our budget people to identify the funds and trying to find which pot of money that we can take from. I think I can tell you, as of last night, we just got the approval for the district to send over its $150,000, which was actually due on October 1st. And so we face this challenge every year. So really for us, you know, finding $150,000 on its own may not, you know, the amount of money may not seem like a lot to most people, but when you're trying to find a specific pot of money to draw from each year, and each year the pot of money changes, that becomes a real challenge for us. And so you try to anticipate, you try to start earlier in the year, but every year we always end up coming up, you know, somewhat late. So that, I think that's our biggest challenge for the district.
Okay. And what's the, has the strained relationship between Metro and Top-Down change, has that improved in your opinion?
In my opinion, yes, I would say it has improved. I know that there's been a lot of media coverage recently about since the accident, and we are, and by we, I mean both WMATA and TOC are very committed to moving forward with the task at hand, because we still have corrective action plans that we need to approve. We have a triennial audit that we need to prepare for, so we still have day-to-day things that we need to forward on. And so our commitment is to continue to work with WMATA to make those things happen.
Okay, thank you.
Well, perhaps we should kind of move to that set of issues now, because I think we'd like to understand better not just where things stand now, but kind of where they have been from your perspective and what's happened. My understanding is that the dispute between yourselves and WMATA staff seems to have begun around last May, and I think we need to understand, number one, what it was that you felt you needed, you as a committee needed to be able to do to carry out your responsibilities, and what happened that created a problem in your mind, and then you can tell us kind of where you think it is now, but I want to understand what it is, number one, that you felt you had to be able to do, and how things worked when you tried to do that from your perspective.
Okay. Well, in May, we met with WMATA, the WMATA Safety Office, because as part of our requirements, we do conduct audits of the system throughout the year. So we had met with the Safety Office to go out onto the right-of-way to review a special order 0706. That was a requirement for regarding our rail right-of-way protection on for railway workers.
That's a special order of who?
0706.
Whose special order is
I'm
it?
Sorry, WMATA special order.
Okay, so that's sorry. A WMATA regulation.
It's a WMATA, yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
And so our intent was to go out onto the right-of-way to observe track walkers and their interactions with the trains. So we wanted to make sure that they were doing proper hand signals, that the trains were slowing down to 10 miles per hour, that sort of thing.
We'll actually stop there, because I think I'd like to understand a little bit of what that is. So, in other words, there are particular things that related to safety that you felt you needed to observe to see if they were happening. So there were specific kind of activities or practices that you would be looking for.
Yes.
So give me a little, because, you know, we don't necessarily know what those are.
Oh, okay. Well, 0706, basically, this was kind of as a reaction to the track worker fatalities of both at Eisenhower Avenue and DuPont Circle. So WMATA issued a special order that basically stated that in the future going forward, trains that were entering a work zone would be required to slow down to 10 miles an hour. The track workers on the right-of-way had to give the operator necessary hand signals to proceed through the work zone. And so what we wanted to observe was whether this was in compliance. So
basically about 3 years ago, I think it was now, when there were a couple of particular incidents that cost the lives and two incidents of employees, subsequently, WMATA put in place certain regulations intended to prevent that from happening.
Correct.
And require people to do certain things in certain situations, and you wanted to go see that they were doing them.
Correct.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry,
Mr. Linton, did you?
I just wanted a question of who physically was going to do it. Was it that you were going to do it, or your contractors who you hire were the ones that actually were going to do the observation? So that's a point of information that I need to have.
We, on that day, it was both members of the Tri-State Oversight Committee, myself, and Mr. Bassett here. And we also had, we had members from our consultants. So it was the, both the TOC members and the consultants were wanting to go out onto the right-of-way that day.
Follow.
Have you done this before?
I have not, no.
I have.
You have?
Okay. So, Mr. Bassett, you have actually done this particular.
I have actually been out. First thing I would add is that Mr. Madison, myself, and all of the contractors that we were going to take with us out there had completed WMATA's right-of-way safety access class and were current with that training, and we held valid right-of-way access certification. Personally, I had been out onto the right-of-way as part of one of the community emergency response team familiarizations.
You mean apart from your TOC work?
It was as part of my TOC work.
Well,
that's
both.
Gotcha.
Is there another?
I just want to clarify that. So you as TOC members and the consultants that you hired were a part of the team that would go out. But to Mr. Bassett's point, you are. Do you on a regular basis get training or revised training or how?
Yes,
how
ma'am.
Do you? Okay, you do.
Yes.
Okay, and is that done at some period of time and is signed off by WMATA? Is that the process?
Yes. In fact, the
yes,
I can show you my right-of-way access card. Every year, it's a requirement within our TOC program that we attend WMATA's employee right-of-way safety access class held at their Carmen Turner facility. That applies not only for TOC members, but it also applies for our consultants as well. I should also point out that our consultants do this work at a number of other transit properties and oversight organizations. So not only are they required to be current on right-of-way transit safety practices here at the authority, they're also required to be current on right-of-way safety for about a half dozen or a dozen other places. So these are experienced. Well, it is not a matter of standard practice for Mr. Madison and I to walk track. it is, we do stay current on our training.
Just one additional question. As TOC members, are there any professional skills that you are required to bring to this position? Let me just use the example.
Okay.
I know nothing about tracks or trains, but I've learned a lot. That's about the extent of my knowledge base. So when you say as TOC members, do you come from a specific? You're with the DRPT, is that right? So understood in that role, you have a technical. You're with the Department of Transportation.
Yes.
So that's the entire membership. And are you engineers in that regard?
No, we are not engineers. I am not an engineer. And most of our TOC members are not, we're not specific, we don't have necessarily specific requirements. We have a range of job skills that we bring to the membership. But to kind of address that issue, one of the things that we are provided is we are provided training through what's called the Transportation Safety Institute. So they do provide, you know, classes on rail system safety, transit safety, those sorts of things. But
Is that required training?
Yes, it is. Actually, for members who are for state safety oversight managers across the country, they are encouraged to attend these TSI courses.
Women.
Or is it a requirement?
The question I had was, is it required of membership? I understand everybody in the transit industry is encouraged to go to TSI. The question I had was whether or not in your role, Is it a requirement?
Actually,
I'm trying to understand this.
Yes, in order for me to come over, I was required to take TSI classes as part of my role in the state.
And that's required by TS. That's required by the tri-state. Or is it required by FTS?
Each individual member agency within the TOC sets qualifications and it makes the determination of who they choose to appoint to the committee. Some people come with almost. With minimal rail experience, some people come, example of one of our members from Maryland, with I think almost 30 years of experience in rail transit safety. So it's the determination of the individual agency. Once we do become TOC members, we are categorized by FTA as State Safety Oversight Program Managers. And with that categorization comes something that I would like to make sure the FTA gets credit for. which is funding and training support, not only to encourage us to go to TSI classes, but in fact, all State Safety Oversight Program managers are given a certain amount of support every year from FTA to allow them to travel and attend those training classes without cost to their home agents.
If I might add, some of the observations of the State Safety Oversight Program revealed that training and standards were not in place. If you looked at the 2006 GAO report on state safety oversight, those things were revealed to FTA. So as Madison indicated and Matt, FTA took a concerted effort to identify various programs and various tiers for new people coming into the state safety oversight to provide through the Transportation Safety Institute, which is also one that funds, it's funded by FTA, to enhance the training of new people coming in, because we recognize that many states were putting people in the state safety oversight, and one day you're this person and the next day you're in the state safety oversight. So FTA recognized that as a board and created invitational travel, training programs, guidance, measures that they felt until Congress or somebody else provided funding that they would go about educating and training the state safety oversights, because they were the ones that were tasked with carrying out FTA's oversight missions. And so it was not enough money, but it was being done.
This is all very helpful. I do want Mr. Madison to be able to continue with the story now that we have a better understanding. Mr. Graham, do you want to get a question?
Well, I just want to, I think it's worthy of emphasis that this inquiry from the TOC, which is our state safety oversight agency, was about worker safety.
Yes.
Worker protection. This is what this was about. And this is very relevant to keep in mind as we proceed. You have said, Mr. Bassett, that you had previously done this track inspection.
Let me clarify. I have previously been out onto
You've
the
previously
active
been out with it. So on the previous occasion, I think there was one previous occasion,
yes,
that
one.
Talk did it. In 2007.
I particularly, but yes, it was the fall of 2007.
But just tell us briefly, not at length, but just briefly, what were the findings and how they were, and what happened to the findings from that inspection?
When I stated that I had been out there previously, I simply meant that I had gone out onto an active right away.
This but you were a TOC member at this time.
I was at the time, yes.
So what happened to the report that was filed? What was its relevance to WMATA operations?
In 2006, when I went out in particular, this wasn't part of a formal report. In 2007, as part of our triennial audit, we did send our contractor staff out to conduct, as part of this audit, an evaluation of, at the time, which was Special Order 0702, which was the precursor to Special Order 0706, dealing with right-of-way safety protection. That in particular, that audit report that came out, came in under our
Let me interrupt you, because in the interest of time, I just want to, maybe I'm not asking this question right yet, but I'm attempting to just get a more concrete sense of just, you know, if I walked the track, I was at the track the train accident on June 22nd, I could have walked the track and did walk the track and looked at it, and, you know, I mean, I don't know how, it wasn't meaningful in terms of any safety observations I made. What were the safety observations you made on the occasions that you went on this inspection, and what did they contribute, and what happened to them?
In 2007, the specific part where we went out as an audit team to evaluate this, there were a number of findings of concern about Special Order 0702. We sent them over to WMATA as part of the final audit report, and they took a number of actions to revise and reevaluate 0702, and they created 0706.
Did you want to get this? I think we should see this.
Yeah.
Let's request this, Mr. Cato.
Yeah.
Let's find out what actually happened. And finally, let me just say, you mentioned, Mr. Bassett, and maybe you did as well, Mr. Madison, I didn't catch it, that the TOC reviews the NTSB probable cause finding. Did I hear that correctly?
No. We are required to approve the findings of probable cause for all accidents which meet the certain reportable threshold that I outlined. NTSB accidents, generally, when the NTSB chooses to investigate an accident, generally it's obviously of a very severe nature. When they take over an accident, we play a support role. So we are not, to clarify, we are not required to approve the probable cause of anything NTSB does. However, if, as part of the final accident report, if WMATA chooses to adopt NTSB reports as its own.
Well, whose probable cause are you reviewing? Your own?
No, the transit agencies under 659 investigate accidents and incidents technically under the authority of the State Safety Oversight Agency. So when they conduct an investigation, they do so under the authority of the oversight agency. Therefore, when they submit that accident report to the SSO, in this case the TOC, we are required to approve that probable cause, and then subsequently we adopt the report as our own.
So that's potentially very important.
Yeah, sir.
How many have you approved or disapproved?
I don't have those numbers offhand. We keep a very detailed tracking spreadsheet of all incidents that we approve, as well as incidents that we are still holding on to that we have not yet provided.
Can we request that information as well?
I certainly agree.
Can you, Mr. Madison, will you provide us with the information on the role of the TOC in approval of any probable cause fund? Thank you.
I would assume WMATA would have copies of that as well, since all of I think our own staff would be able to provide us.
We can provide. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think we now have a picture of what it was that you were attempting to do and why, and tell us now, you know, kind of what happened.
What we were told was that we could not go out onto the subway under live conditions or with the third rail powered as part of their what's called a standard operating procedure number 33, which basically states that if you are essentially if you are not a WMATA employee, if you are considered a contractor, your ability to go out under the right of way, they would have to drop the third rail power and establish a work zone for your contractor. And so since there is no current provision in the SOPs that designates, you know, the state safety oversight, you know, because if you look at my ID badge, it says contractor, even though I'm, you know, state safety oversight. So we ended up, well, we could have gone out onto the right of way, but we wouldn't have been able to observe train movements or anything like that. We would have, you know, so what we ended up doing, the safety office sent us out with an escort from their office, and we observed the right-of-way workers from the cab or from the behind the cab of a revenue train. So basically we boarded, you know, downtown Road out towards Glenmont. We were standing in that first row of seats right behind the operator and just kind of looking out onto the track bed and observed the train movements that way. So they did provide us one way of accessing the right-of-way. However, we felt that we would want to have a better view of the right-of-way as opposed to, you know, riding on the back of a, you know, riding on the cab of a train. So we were trying to see if we could get a more accurate access to the right-of-way or get a more accurate picture of the conditions on the right-of-way. Not just
an vantage point that you didn't think was provided by being in the cab.
Right. So that that was kind of where things left off, and we kind of went back and forth. So we sent correspondence over to Metro, which I don't know if everybody has copies of that or not, but the correspondence went back and forth between the TOC and the safety office. And that's how it kind of led down to the articles that appeared in the Post, I believe, last week.
Let me clarification. So, I mean, you meet regularly with a lot of safety staff. So did you initially ask this, like, verbally?
Oh, yes, we did.
And that would have been before May 15th, then?
Yes. So in anticipation of coming over to do the audit, you know, we laid out, you know, kind of what we wanted to see and do, and there were some interviews that we wanted to conduct as well, so it was part of a comprehensive audit that we wanted to do.
If I could add, we sent over, you know, a lot of information about not only did we want to go out and walk track, this was one component of a larger audit. We wanted to do interviews, we wanted to go do riding observations, and the authority made a significant effort to make people available all the way up from management level down to rail operators, down to supervisors, and we conducted some fairly comprehensive interviews. They made people available to accompany us out riding on revenue vehicles. So this was not the only part of the audit, and they, I want to make sure they get credit for where credit's due, that we certainly appreciate the fact they made a number of people available to conduct very in-depth interviews and, you know, evaluation of documents and just discussions about this. This was one part that we consider to be an essential component of the audit, which we weren't able to do, but there was a number of, there were a number of other aspects.
It accommodated you in other ways, but this portion of the request, when you brought it up initially in your, you know, your face-to-face meeting, did they tell you right away, now you're not going to be able to do that, or well, they actually told you that? So prior, so then you went put it in writing, is that what?
Yes. As a way of hopefully clarifying our request. Okay.
So you laid it out in writing what you wanted, and you sent that letter on May 15th, I guess, and then you got a response a couple weeks later.
Yes.
And you were told no.
Yes, we were, I remember correctly, we were denied. The denial was access to live or live track under, I believe, under employee conditions. So we couldn't go out as WMATA employees onto live track. So we would have to go out as contractors onto an area where the third rail had been dropped and a work zone had been established for us.
And you felt that that wouldn't allow you to observe what you needed to be.
Okay. Right, because if we wanted to observe, you know, train movements and their and interactions with right-of-way workers, we need the trains to be able to move.
Right. Mr. Grant.
Yeah, I must be very clear about this point, because I think there has been, let me use the word obfuscation.
Whatever that means.
In terms of some of the, yes, whatever it means. I think it means the right thing I'm trying to use. But in terms of subsequent Metro interpretations of what happened here. But the letter from Alexa Dupigny Samuels, dated May 29th of this year, says, "We are sorry to inform you that your request to have employee-type access to the right-of-way during all operational phases is denied." Okay. Then she goes on to say in the letter, "The WMATA will make every effort," I'm still quoting, "WMATA will make every effort to get the TOC members out to an isolated work site," which was not what you had in mind. And so I think that, you know, the plain meaning of this letter of May 29th is to say, sorry, Charlie, you're not coming, under the circumstances that you want to come. Even though, and I want to emphasize this too, that, and I've read your letter carefully, Mr. Madison, even though you indicated a willingness for additional training, you know, additional restrictions, you're ready to talk about all of that, and even with that in mind, the response back from Metro WMATA is no. I really appreciate the work that you've done on this, Mr. Madison, and we have the best reports on you in terms of your ability and your dedication to your work. But I do want to ask you, once you were blocked in this request and recognizing how important this issue was, worker protection, I have to ask you, why don't you just pick up the phone and not be so bold as to suggest you might have called me, you know, as chairman of the Metro Board and said, Jim, you know, we can't get this work done, or perhaps gone to Mr. Francis or Mr. Cato. In other words, pursued this, because less than a month after you wrote this letter, after you got the reply from Ms. Alexa Dupigny Samuels, we had this great train wreck, and then the employee fatalities that followed. And so I'm just wondering why, and again, with the utmost respect for your work, you know, why didn't you just take an additional step and say, hey, we're stymied here. Help us break up this roadblock.
I guess when normal, well, under normal conditions, I'll say first, under normal conditions, we're all staff people within our agencies. And so we didn't have, you know, like you said, we didn't have really a mechanism in which to kind of move issues like this up the food chain. You know, this is, like you said this morning, this is the first time the talk has come before the Metro Board. You know, and we didn't, up until this point, to my knowledge, we didn't have a relationship with your board. In hindsight, what we can say is, in light of everything that has happened with this issue, with the recent fatalities on the right-of-way from the right-of-way workers, we're trying to develop some kind of a mechanism so that if we're not getting what we need, we can float it up through either Mr. Francis or through Chief Taborn or up to you. And, you know, and we've had some discussions within our agencies about, you know, how would we do that? Is that a quarterly report to you guys? Is it where we come down once a year or twice a year and just report out, this is what the talk has been working on for this year. Here are all the things that are coming down, and here are some of the issues that we're having. So we should have floated it up to your level, and, you know, that was something that we didn't do on our part. But going forward, we are trying to figure out some kind of a mechanism to get things to you. So if there's an issue like this, you're aware of what's going on, and it's, you don't find out about it either in the paper or, you know, through letters and things like that.
Let me say, Mr. Chairman, I think we're dealing here with able public servants. There's no question about it, and I want to emphasize that. But this, to my mind, illustrates a systematic. You know, this is because you are operating under certain expectations and encouragements, and this is not really safety oversight. This is something else. Maybe some of my colleagues will describe what it is, but this is something else, because this is not an agency with the way you've been structured, the way you have been established, not about how you are peopled, but the way you've been structured, you know, limits them in this kind of very severe way. If this was truly an independent safety agency, such as, by the way, I think this statute anticipates,
yes.
I think this statute anticipates that, then this higher level review would have happened. You would not have taken this letter from Alexa DePigme Samuels and said, oh, well, we'll continue to chat about this, through a train wreck, through employee fatalities, through everything else. And here we are. What is the date today?
Well, I think those are good points, Mr. Graham. I would say, though, that, you know, frankly, they continued to send, as I now know, a series of letters.
Yes, there were more letters.
Which, you know,
but they weren't
in partial illustration of your point, were never submitted to us by anybody, including WMATA staff. In fact, I only saw them last night for the first time. So it really does paint a picture that makes your point. They continue to send strongly worded letters that made very clear the issues that I think today we understand, but about which, unfortunately, we were unaware.
Then let me just turn, just 1 second. Because now we should ask Mr. Cato, when did you become aware of this exchange?
The exchange of letters, I became aware of it, let me make sure I get my dates right, but approximately a week ago last Friday.
And these are letters that began on May 15th and continued through the summer. I mean, there's July 21st, I think, a July 30th. I mean, this is on both sides of the accent. I mean, it's exactly as Mr. Graham was saying. And what we're identifying here is that this matter, clearly a very significant matter of worker safety, as Mr. Graham noted, was not brought to the attention of either the general manager or the board for months. And that's, you know, and I want to emphasize what Mr. Graham said. This is really not about the people who are on it, who clearly were earnestly pursuing their responsibilities as they saw it. But it does raise questions, which I hope in a little bit later we can get to, about what kind of remedies should be made to fix this institutional situation, which is, you know, to some degree beyond the power of people who are, you know, they've been given a charge within a certain framework. They work within that framework. We need to evaluate that, and I have some ideas about that. But I wanted to make sure that we don't get too far down before we make sure we understand how this story closes. And I don't want to cut anybody off if you have a question on this, but I was going to next ask if we could kind of see where in their minds this matter now is following this exchange and where they think we are today. Mr. Linton, before that, did you have something?
Well, I wanted to hear from our safety officer, because I've heard from them in terms of, you know, clearly stating what it is they were attempting to do. I heard the letter recited, but I would also like to get an understanding of where our safety officer thought the situation was, yes. What she was trying to communicate, and what her thinking was at the time.
I think that's good. Can we, just before that, can we ask Mr. Madison, Mr. Bassett, to tell us kind of the conclusion from their, where do you think we are now at the end of all this exchange, and today where are you relative to what you were seeking? What is your understanding now of where things stand?
Well, today, basically, we have both WMATA and the TOC have drafted a policy on that spells out kind of more in detail about how the TOC can access the right-of-way, under what conditions, notifications, that sort of thing. Right now, we have that. Both of those, the document, I think you sent that to us last night for review. So right now we've got it going to the general counsels of the different jurisdictions for comments, and I believe WMATA's doing comments on their end, but also, as I understand from Mr. Pena Samuels, that there is a special order that's going to be created within WMATA permanent order that's going to be created within WMATA that will be disseminated throughout the agency so that if the TOC has to go out to either access the right-of-way or go out to some other WMATA facility, people there know that, okay, well, you're with the TOC, this permanent order here indicates, okay, you're good to go. And so, as I understand, that will eventually make its way into the Metro Rail Safety Handbook, and Safety Rail Handbook. So we've got two documents kind of working right now. And so,
so it's in flux at the moment?
I would be saying my point would be we are somewhere good. We have been writing from the authority that they recognize that we need to be able to access the track under active train movement conditions. We have been working with the safety office to put these into a workable policy. Appreciate the effort of everybody at the authority who's been working with us on this. And I would anticipate that in the relatively near future, we will be able to complete the section of the audit which we were previously unable to.
So you think it's moving toward resolution, but 6 months after this started, you don't yet have the access you were looking for?
Mr. Zimmerman, if I may...
Hang on. Okay. I want to know what Mr. Madison and Mr. Bassett think. I mean, my sense is they're trying to cooperate with you. You feel like they're trying to cooperate with you, and you're trying to be, you know, good team players yourself. But in terms of what you've asked for access, today you don't yet have that. Do I have that correct? I'm confident that if after this meeting, if I were to go to the safety office and say that we want to go out as soon as humanly possible and we want to complete this audit, that they would accommodate us.
You think they'd say yes this time?
I do believe they would.
They have said yes.
And they have said yes in writing.
Well, the general manager has said yes.
Well, I wanted to make sure I understood that Mr. Madison, Mr. Bassett viewed that as a yes to what they were asking.
Yes, we do. That's the general manager.
We'll certainly go there next. But that was really what I was trying to understand, if that was your understanding.
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Cato?
Yes, and I want to make a clarification. The new policy concerning access to the right-of-way still does not give the employee access required. That access is given to employees who work on the right-of-way, have specialized training, and are routinely there without escorts. The agreement that we have is they could go into the right-of-way, a live right-of-way, but they must have escorts.
But they agreed to that in the May 15th.
That's all they were asking in the first place.
That was never an issue, Mr. Cato. They agreed to that right off the bat.
I'm just making a statement. Well, I'm not challenging anything.
But I think Mr. Graham's making a point, because I have to say, as recently as 2 days ago, I was given to understand that the issue was whether or not TOC members would be allowed without escort, and that they were requiring... They were requiring to be without escort, and WMATA was insisting that they have escort for reasons of safety. But now, having seen the letter that, in fact, they submitted on May 15th, the letter clearly states, should additional training be required before TOC personnel are permitted access to the right-of-way under active train moving conditions, our members and consultants are willing to undergo this training as soon as possible. TOC personnel are committed to following all WMATA safety regulations during any right-of-way activities, including protective equipment, radio communication with the control center, and the participation of a WMATA escort at all times. Mr. Madison's letter said that on May 15th. It was reiterated in subsequent letters in July, in which they said again that they'd take any additional training and that they would, on July 30th, they said the TOC is not requesting unfettered and unescorted access to the right-of-way. Rather, we are requesting access with an approved WMATA escort. So there seems to be confusion about exactly what they were asking and what WMATA's position was. And as I said, as recently as this week, I was being given to understand that the problem was they didn't want an escort. And clearly that's not the case. Mr. Cato?
What I might want to add, Mr. Zimmerman, is that in an effort for TOC to confirm that track workers and were given the proper hand signals and the train operator was doing what he needed to do, that could have easily, when you look at the hazards inherent to the track environment, been done not necessarily in the cab of the car, but behind the train operator. And so you would have witnessed the slowing down. You could also see the track workers given the appropriate signal. And I think we all are concerned about the safety dangers of the system. And I think what was done was to be done in the view of the safety concerns, not only for TALK, but for making sure that we run a safe operations. We have track workers doing work on a daily basis, along with escorts. So now if we bring additional people in that environment, now we have to have escorts for the TALK people who will be the spotters. And that just creates, in that particular situation, an unsafe situation.
So your view is they should not be allowed such access?
To witness that operations, because it clearly can be witnessed from the cab.
Let me make a clarification there.
Okay, no.
My letter and my instructions are that the TALK will have the ability to enter the right-of-way with escorts to conduct their work. What the chief was discussing was the best method for a certain task would be to be in the rail car itself. But my instructions are if the TALK requires or requests to go into the right-of-way to observe any of our operations, that they may do so with the proper escorts.
I mean, I personally obviously have no way of knowing the technical answer to such a question, but it seems to me that the issue is whether a body that's purpose is to do oversight is going to be the one that determines the vantage point from which to do that oversight, or whether that should be determined by the body that is the subject of the oversight. And I think that's going to be fundamentally problematic. And I'm a little concerned that I asked over here if Mr. Madison and Mr. Bassett think they now have the access that they were seeking, and they said they believe they would have it if they asked it again. They think it's moving in the right direction. When we come back over here, I again am hearing the argument that seems to be saying, well, they really shouldn't be doing that, and there's better ways to do it. Now, Mr. Cato, when you spoke in just now, you said, yes, they'll have that access.
I have communicated that, yes.
Are you the general manager?
At least the last time I checked, yeah, I was.
Exactly. So let's let that, we have the general manager's decision. I think that nothing could be plainer than that.
Okay, Mr. Linton.
Well, it seems to me that we have several layers of problems here, I can, hearing what the TALK is required to do by statute, and I would say to Mr. Graham that don't just look at statute, you need to look at regulations, because very often when we issued regulations, they don't necessarily follow the statute line by line. And very often, the Congress, in passing legislation, even they recognize at some point that some of the things in the legislation doesn't quite fit order with the realities of the agency, which is required. So even sometimes after the legislation is passed, there's a consultation with the Congress as the regulations are, in fact, done. So you need to look at the regulations. I would suggest that. The other thing is that it is clear to me that there's kind of, even though TALK has been given the authority, there's not the view, they don't seem to have the view of the level of their authority to the extent that if NHTSA or NTSB had an issue with a staffer, they would directly go to the head of the agency and communicate that. That seems to be comparable with the level of the authority that they have, and that's comparable with their understanding of their authority. It seems to me that there's still some thought that, well, we are kind of a cooperative group that works at the level of the staff. We try to make sure that they're following the rules that they have established, and we work cooperatively in order to do that. That's not necessarily their fault, but it also suggests that there's some clear misunderstanding or need to be clarity provided in what they're empowered to do and how that gets done. The other thing is that, with that, I think there's still some confusion about the training, the level of training, who's doing what. There's a lot of gray areas here. And I would, as the chief has suggested, I probably would have some gray areas too, being concerned about safety. Well, my biggest concern about safety is for anybody that enters the rail. If, in fact, an accident to occur, just as much as we would be blamed for not having access, we would be blamed for if there was an accident that occurred if one of the top members was on the rail. So you know, I think that, you know, I think that our staff really hasn't been beat up quite a bit. Safety is quite an issue. I think it's something that's near and dear to them. I think they live and breathe this. And I don't think there was an effort to bluntly just stop access. I think there may have been some legitimate concerns about the safety and what is the best way of accomplishing the objective. And I think that's a discussion that needs to be, you know, continue to happen. I think there's some clarity. Hopefully this board, and I don't know if the Congress will allow it, but there needs to be some input from this board in terms of talking to the Congress or testifying in terms of some of the gaps that we see in both the statute and things that are going forward. And I think that's something that we should take advantage of as well.
I think you make extremely valid points, Mr. Linton, and as did Mr. Graham. And along these lines, it seems to me that there are at least three sets of things that we need to do. I think we need to approach this problem on three levels. Number one is our own agency. We are, you know, we're the policymaking body for WMATA. We are, in the end, the principal oversight body for WMATA, and we have responsibilities there. And that's one set of things that I think we need to do. Secondly, because the TOC is a function of the states, Maryland, Virginia, District of Columbia, I think we need to make certain appeals to them, because they actually are the ones that, you know, TOC's a creature of them. And thirdly, I think there's a clear need for action on the federal side, and I think we need to weigh in on that. And I have some specific proposals on that, which, if people are ready, I'd like to get to, but,
can we have a
but I don't want to jump before
Ms.
you're done.
Alexa,
ask the questions.
The Pygmy Samuels.
We can certainly do that and then get to the discussion.
Well, let me just mention, I may have confused the issue a little bit. I was quoting from the regulations, not from the statute.
From CFR.
Right. Because this is 659 is the regulation.
Yeah.
So if I suggested, but the statute is much briefer, and but it's very clear about the establishment of the
I think
oversight.
Both make your point.
Thank you. Well, it does, but I, you know, I just want to. Can we hear from Ms. Alexa Bigby Samuels as to what
Cicado.
I just wanted to comment, and yes, you can. You can ask for, speak to whomever you want. We support and we believe in safety in this organization. In fact, I've had the opportunity to testify in front of Congress for more oversight from a safety standpoint, and have met with the Federal Transit Administrator as well as the Secretary of Transportation, LaHood. And my position has been stronger safety oversight. And so this agency not only believes in it, but have taken active steps to cause that to happen. From the perspective of details and letters and certain statements, the focus has always been rightly, in my judgment, is the safety of anyone who enters the right-of-way. Are there some things that we could have done better in our communications and understanding and working in a partnership? I agree, yes. But the intent was always to make sure that whoever goes out on the right-of-way has the proper training and it's in the proper condition for their safety. And having said that, I think Alexa could talk a little bit more about the specifics of the letter. And, you know, again, today, the letter would say something different, but and what her intent was when she sent that letter. That's what you're asking for, I believe.
Very good.
Good morning. As the chief safety officer of this agency, I view my job as taking the safety and security of employees, patrons, contractors, whomever enters onto our right-of-way very seriously. With that said, with the letter that I received from Mr. Madison on May 15th, subsequent to that letter, we did sit down and we had conversations for clarity as to specifically what they were requiring. That conversations led us to my responded document of May 29th, In hindsight, I see the disconnection because I realized that they asked for X, but based on the letter of May 15th, as well as conversations that occurred between the 15th and the 28th, that's what my letter responded to. With the Tri-State Oversight, anytime they, well, let me back up. I have never prohibited them from doing their oversight responsibilities. My goal was to understand their goals, which they were trying to achieve, and to put them in the safest manner possible on behalf of this agency. That was merely the point. It was never to shut it down, and even subsequent to my letter, we've had conversations with Mr. Madison and Matt Bassett as well. Even the safety escort, when they did take them out on May 14th, they were to arrange to do more visits on that specific weekend, and there was no track work done on that weekend. So we've always opened up the opportunity for them to achieve what they were trying to achieve in the safest manner possible.
Mr. Graham.
To whom did you consult when you, prior to writing this letter of May 29?
I didn't consult with anyone. As I've mentioned, when we talk about I take oversight very seriously. So in discussions with them, it was my interpretation that we were working through and providing the best alternatives to get what they were trying to achieve. So I didn't feel a need that it had to be elevated, because as for our communication between WMATA staff and the TOC, it was clear.
Could you describe for me your qualifications to be the chief safety officer at this agency?
I have a bachelor's degree in civil engineering. I have a master's degree in quality systems management. I've been in the transportation industry for 8 years.
The transportation industry, meaning you've been
transit.
Here?
Transit. And prior to that, I was a tunnel engineer for contracting work.
Were you, prior to your appointment as chief safety officer, were you involved in safety matters at Metro WMATA?
That's correct, yes.
For how long were you in that role?
I was in that role for 4 years.
4 years. I think the question that is most on my mind right now is the fact that, well, you've indicated you didn't consult with anyone on writing this letter. You denied them access except in a remote area, according to what this letter says. But then we had a train wreck, and then we had employee fatalities, and all of which occurred subsequent to this. And yet I'm wondering, Ms. DeBigney-Samuels, why at no time, the general manager has just told us he found out about this just a few days ago, why at no time did you not bring to the attention of your superiors your direct report to Mr. Cato?
At the time, yes.
At the time?
No, actually in May I was not a direct report to the general manager.
But at the time of the train accident, were you a direct report?
No, I was not.
Who did you report to?
The chief administrative officer.
Who is that?
Emeka Maname.
Okay. Did you bring this, at any point after all of these subsequent horrible things that were happening, did you say, oh, by the way, I have denied access except under extremely limited circumstances to the TOC? Did you
bring it? Yes, there was conversation.
And whose attention did you bring it to?
My direct supervisor.
To Mr. Monomay.
That's correct.
And what did he say to you?
I don't recall.
You don't recall what he said to you?
We had conversations based on, I explained to him the scenario of providing safe alternatives to do the work, and he was in concurrence.
Oh, so he agreed with you in that consultation?
That's correct.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to the point where I think this horse is dead. We beat this horse. And I'd like, a lot of information has come to light. And I'm thankful to the two of you for coming down here today, because you explained a lot. I'm thankful for Mr. Pini, Samuels, too, for the information you provided, as well as our chief and our general manager. But we have to move forward. And you sat here and said that you had, I think we all put our comments on the table. Maybe in hindsight is 2020, maybe we would have done some things differently. And this has illustrated that there are some problems in the system, and they're on multi-levels, and that we need to fix them. So now we have to be about the business of fixing things. I know you had some suggestions a few minutes ago, and I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say.
Can I just understand, though, the new situation? Now, we're looking forward.
I like
we're
to
not
forward,
looking back.
Not back.
So let's look forward and just ask Mr. Cato. What is the new situation regarding the supervision of Ms. DePinky Samuel?
She still remains the chief safety officer. I have asked, based upon her discussions with me and her request for additional support and resources, that our chief of police work with her because of his background, extensive background in safety at the federal level, to support her in those responsibilities.
I want to be careful we're not getting into a personnel matter. There's obviously a structural issue of how safety is organized, and that's that part of the thing. I want to thank Mr. Madison, Mr. Bassett. You're certainly welcome to stay, but you know, we've taken a lot of your time and appreciate that, how thoroughly answered and how forthright you've been. I think we all have a lot of work to do, part to help you do the job that you do, which is so important for all of us, and I include in all of us, everybody in this agency, because it's in everyone's interest that the system run as safely as possible, and it's in everyone's interest that everyone believes that, in fact, it is being run as safely as possible and has reason to believe that. So thank you very much. If there's anything you'd like to say before.
I'd just like to thank you. Thank you again for inviting us to come down and speak.
Mr. Chairman, there's another part that I think that we should look to find some better working relationship. I was interested in the fact that there was communication of, I guess, the Memorandum of Understanding review. And it was very interesting to me that the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Virginia, of which we communicate with often, was communicating directly with the top. And nowhere in all of this operation have I communicated at all with anyone in Virginia about this. So there is a huge vacuum in terms of relationships. For example, I would have expected that the TOC would have communicated, and I hope they did, to the Secretary of Transportation or someone within the Virginia structure about their concerns about the issues we've just discussed. And that information would have been conveyed to WMATA board members. I think of the number of times we come together on transportation issues from every aspect of this region. And so to me, there is a huge void to have, one, the Secretary of Transportation sit in a Transportation Commission meeting and talk about issues regarding WMATA, the General Manager come to the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission to talk about issues regarding WMATA, to have you work for the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation and not know who you are when we talk to the Rail and Public Transportation about numerous things. There is a strange organizational relationship here in which I would hope we would address not only WMATA to talk, but really the structure that has been created through this regulation, so that we function as what we think a unit when we come here every day. I come here with the understanding that I represent Virginia and Fairfax County. And when I think that there exists an entire entity that I have no relationship with, yet there are other ways that we both have common relationships, that we have a void here that is beyond what we're talking about here. I would have expected that we needed to know about what your memorandum of understanding was if the Secretary was communicating to you. So there is a lot to be said about the communication that's been here, but some of that may never have happened if the relationships were better to start with.
I agree completely, and that's why I think we need to address these in multiple directions, and which is why I'm going to make some proposals that you can at least work with and see what people think, that involve both direction to our general manager, appeal to the secretaries of transportation, who, you know, again, that's another line of communication that doesn't seem to have been open, as well as the federal government. Mr. Allen.
I just want to follow up to Ms. Hodgins. I think we have a different experience in D.C., and I don't know if because a representative works for our equivalent of a Secretary of Transportation, but I get briefed biweekly by our Department of Transportation team, and there is always a talk issue on my briefing agenda. And so the communication works pretty well within the District of Columbia. I apologize if it doesn't work that well elsewhere, but we'd love to send our template over to.
I'm good for best practices in any manner I can find them that make me function better.
All right. I'm going to distribute now my thoughts on two aspects of this. Just want to make sure I'm sending slightly in the right direction to him. So, to deal with these two parts, I'm proposing two things. First, I'm proposing that the board, this committee, forward to the board, obviously, a statement that is intended to establish policy from this board with regard to cooperation with the Tri-State Oversight Committee. Secondly, I'm going to recommend we send a letter to the state transportation secretaries to try and address some of the issues that only they can help with. With all this, let me say I meant this to be a starting point, and I'm sure it can be improved by the input of my colleagues, and feel free to do so. But the first part of this, which would be a statement of this board aimed at internal policy, would be a policy on cooperation with the Tri-State Oversight Committee that would say, Tri-State Oversight Committee created in 1997 under such and such regulation was established as the official state oversight agency for Metrorail. The board recognizes that independent monitoring is vital for the safety of the system and to the maintenance of public confidence in the system. Thus, it is imperative that WMATA personnel comply with and are known to be compliant with TOC requests for access or information which they may find necessary to carry out their responsibilities. Accordingly, and there are five specific things. It is the policy of the WMATA Board of Directors that the employees of the authority will at all times cooperate fully with its federally recognized safety oversight agency, and the general manager is so directed. Two, if for any reason staff should deem it necessary to deny a request of the TOC, the general manager shall notify the board immediately. Three, the general manager will keep the board regularly informed of interactions with the TOC, including status reports on the triennial review. Four, the general manager is directed to review the circumstances surrounding the dispute over right-of-way access for the TOC, to report his findings to the board and detail actions taken to address the problem. And five, the general manager is directed to reassess the organization of internal safety oversight responsibilities at WMATA, to report his findings to the board and to detail any restructuring undertaken. As I said, I mean this to be a starting point, and I open discussion on that.
Do you want to move
it? I can certainly do that. I'll move its approval to the forward to the board direction. Seconded by Mr. Graham. Discussion is now open.
Crystal clear.
Very clear. I think it's Albert. So I've been on this board for going on a year now. It's going to be a year, I think, at the end of this month. And I've always erred on the side of giving the general manager as much latitude as possible. I mean, we fired, I think, you guys just renewed his contract, a general manager that you think is the best in this business. And it puzzles me a little bit that you're now asking the general manager to notify you on every request that the TOC brings on safety issues. I don't know how he practically gets his work done, particularly in a heightened environment. So if we can give the general manager, I'm just speaking specifically to item two, if there's any way to facilitate a communication of this request without demanding that the general manager notify the board immediately, I just think that's a professional courtesy that I would ask for the general manager.
Can I respond to that? Sure. Item two is intended to say if the staff is going to say no to the TOC, they have to tell us that they're saying no. And that's what it says. If staff wants to deny a request, then we need to know that. So let me ask Mr. Cato. About this specifically, and then I'll ask you to comment on any of it that you see as a problem, you know, in your carrying out your job. I want to know that. But if you could address Mr. Albert's point on number two specifically.
I think it's a reasonable request to ask that we notify you when the TOC is denied a request that's under the statute that has set them up, and that we've never had anything outside of that. But and I will notify the board immediately, I like to have it defined. I mean, you know, I think a reasonable time period is how I'm taking immediate. The issue that I have a question on is number five. I am going to do that anyhow. Mm-hmm. And I have done that, and I have recommendations, and I have taken action. I will report the findings, and it was my intent in closed session to talk about some personnel issues. So number five, in my judgment, is not necessary. But I will report. I was going to do that anyhow. As you get into the issues, I understand what Mr. Albert is saying. There is...
No, but if you're comfortable with it, I...
No. there is the line of personnel issues and how do we deal with that from a general manager's perspective and then the board policy perspective. Since I've taken care of number five, I don't have an issue with it. But I might have made some comments if I have not done that.
Well, let me say that first... what Mr. Albert described is also my approach to the board governance in general. I do believe that you give the general manager the tools to do the job and hold him responsible and let him organize things as he sees fit. Therefore, I wrote this in a way intended to say, we think you need to look at something, which it is proper for the policy board to do, and tell us what you find and what, if anything, you find necessary to do about it. It is not intended to prescribe how that's done, because I think that should be up to the general manager to handle. And, of course, it doesn't address questions about specific personnel, because I'm not looking to get into that either. The first item here, of course, says that it's the intention of the board that we comply with the TOC. And so number two is really there because if there's some reason why they think they can't, then that's important enough it should be brought up to this level right away. Number three is really intended to do something that a number of members have said this morning. You know, can we see these documents? Can we get these reports? The TOC's sending them over to WMATA. WMATA staff has them. We've never seen them. You know, this whole set of communications that occurred over the last 6 months, I've never received either from the TOC or from WMATA staff. You know, I got it last night from an outside source. And I think board members, you know, should all have the opportunity to see this. But then there's just regular reports. I mean, we ought to know what's going on with the triennial review, for instance. And this is intended to accommodate that. And, of course, four, you may have mostly done at this point, too, but I did mean in four and five to formalize some of this, and that's why I included it with explanation. Further discussion?
As a clarification, in your discussion just a moment ago, you mentioned the letters and correspondence. Are you asking for all correspondence?
I'm saying if there's a dispute between Safety Oversight Agency and this agency.
I would have expected for him to, which I'm sure he's already done, to provide us with a report and a recommendation of what he chooses to do. I think, you know, I don't need a lot more additional information and reports. I think when, in fact, it rises to the level, there's a process that I'm hoping he will establish with his staff in terms of communication. Not happened, and I think that's the symptomatic of what's here today, is one, what's the federal requirements? Two, what is the resources being provided? That's not going to be accomplished by this. And there's a whole level of communications that go beyond here that we talked about today, which is still part of the problem. That doesn't get accomplished by this. I'm not really in favor of supporting this, and I think there's better ways to do it.
I agree. And last point, there's other things we need to do, but other comments? Sorry.
As I look at the five bullets here, I really think they could be boiled down to much less directive. And that is, I think if I look back as to why we're at this point, it is because there has been little communication to this board from the TOC or through the agency about the TOC. And I think that that is the part that I would like to see on a regular basis. We're going to, maybe not, but we're going to go through a lot of information about what has happened with the agency on safety, crime, et cetera. We could simply ask that on a regular basis. We have an update on the work of the TOC when it comes. For example, did I understand that they do an audit every year? Is that you?
Metro is responsible for conducting internal audits on a three-year basis, and we conduct our own external audit to follow up on that every 3 years.
We get the audits on other from our Inspector General. So the process, to me, it's about how we communicate. And, well, we could be specific here, or we could be directive as we would under normal policy level without the aspect of the agency oversight directive. That is, what are the personnel pieces? I'm simply saying that I would probably rather see on a regular basis what activities have occurred with the TOC and whether it is a request of denial of every request, whether or not we could accomplish that by a monthly report or a quarterly report such that that information is given to us. I think our anxiousness about this is that through the lack of information, we now want to see everything that goes on, and I'm not sure we need to be there. It may be a starting point.
I thought what you said is just what was described in 9-3.
Well,
I heard
exactly
you say maybe monthly, quarterly, something, annually. I left that vague. I said regularly. I mean, well, I didn't specify what it was.
I'm just simply saying the other parts of them are maybe not as necessary. If we want to get started that way, I can support that. But I don't want us to believe that every other month we come here, we're going to have now a group of letters that say whatever. As long as I understand that the general manager really is the part that I am probably more concerned in this conversation did not have a communication. But the general manager will be communicating with us as to what staff has been doing rather than we worrying about whether or not there was a letter to the TOC or not, what the general manager has as an accountability guidance.
Mr. Benjamin.
I think it is extremely important, first of all, that this board very clearly make the first statement in this list.
Item one.
It's extremely important that the policy of this board be clearly established. If that is, in fact, carried out, I would expect that number two would be rare, and that, therefore, that would be useful. After that, the question then becomes, how much paperwork do we want to look at? And I think there, whatever the interpretation of the remainder is, we certainly want to know generally what's going on, and we want to know specific issues if they rise to a policy level. I'm not quite sure how we have to word that. But I do hope that one and two, no matter what, will clearly stay there.
Is that an amendment?
I haven't amended anything. I would say leave those in, whatever else we do.
He likes one and two. Ms. Hudson likes number three.
I like them all. And I think the reality, again, is that we're committed. We're just simply restating our commitment to safety. I think it's a matter of semantics, and this is not about John Cato, our current general manager, whom we have a lot of respect for, but we're going to have other general managers in the near future. And if we think that we're tying John's hands specifically, I don't think that's the case here. I think the language that's spelled out is crystal clear, and we're going to leave it the way it is and move on.
Other thoughts? Proposals, amendments? Not? Ready to vote?
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. If it would make you feel better that way. Sure. Why not? The second matter has to do with dealing with the strengthening the talk that if it's going to come, it's going to come, you know, from those who are responsible for it.
Mr. Zimmerman, this is a more complicated issue to my mind and involves other questions. Would it be possible that we could, we don't have to put it off for a month or anything, but can we at least discuss it in another venue?
That's fine. I've distributed it. Let me just say a few words, and if you want to, you know, hold off on action on it, you know, that's fine too. But I just want to say what my thinking is on this, and that is that we need to communicate with the Secretaries of Transportation and essentially convey to them what we've found through this discussion we've had. And I threw down a number of things, and clearly more can be put in there. And as Mr. Graham says, you know, maybe more thought will be required. But it seems to me clear that this system isn't working, and it's not working for reasons that were identified here. And I think it is significant that the GAO did a report in 2006 in which they looked at these state oversight agencies around the country, and they found all kinds of problems. But they specifically noted the problem of a multi-state agency. And as I think Mr. Bassett said at the beginning, or Mr. Madison, you know, there are only two others that are multi-state, and none of them are three-state. So they have a particular challenge that no other such agency has. In that 2006 report, GAO specifically looked at TOC and said that TOC has experienced difficulty obtaining funding, responding to Federal Transit Administration information requests, and ensuring audit findings are addressed. They also said that, you know, they noted that the members appointed to TOC all have other primary duties, and their activities on TOC are collateral to these other daily duties, with at least one exception. The TAC has no dedicated staff, and the TOC members have limited rail operational experience. I'd like to see us look at things like, you know, call upon the states to provide actual dedicated staffing with the kind of personnel who can do what's needed to be done on a regular full-time basis, and to raise the stature of the agency by elevating the, you know, either the individuals who are on it, again, it's not about them, but the people who serve on that should feel empowered to call the secretary and say, you know, we're having a problem over here at WMATA, or to call the general manager or call a board member, and I think that, you know, they need to be empowered. And then finally, I thought that regular reports between these agencies would help. And Ms. Hudgens was talking about the fact that, you know, we've never heard anything even from our own secretary on this, so there's a lot of communication not happening. If TOC was required to provide regular public reports addressed to the secretaries and copied here, it would raise the profile, people would be more aware of it, and they'd be less likely to run into the problems they've had. Mr. Graham.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm fine with this. But the question in my mind is what, in addition to this, we need to be involved in. And that is the fact that the Federal Transit Administration is today expressly prohibited from setting federal safety standards for rail cars, for example, and establishing crashworthiness standards. You know, I think those are also important issues that, you know, maybe the thing to do is to say yes to this, but then have more on those other issues as because we need to be involved with the Congress in terms of determining what an overall transit safety administration looks like, or transit safety responsibility looks like. And I just we could go on this as far as I'm concerned today, but I'd like to at least bookmark for very soon, for action very soon, on these other major issues.
Well, let me give you my third set of thoughts on this, and in this one, I actually...
There's another sheet of paper?
There's another sheet of paper. This is the federal one.
Keeping them.
And in this, I'm suggesting that we go on record supporting federal action on rail safety oversight. And this one, I think I have close to, Ms. O'Keefe would do less work on this, I guess, although you may do more work on it, and you may not like it, but in any case, what it is a resolution that would have WMATA board call upon the federal government to act to set up.
This is good.
Federal.
I mean, let's just add to this that it includes the authority to establish federal safety standards relating to rail cars and
and rail operators.
I'd be happy for any such language that wanted to be added. I mean, there's a policy question here, obviously, and, you know, it's one on which I've made up my mind. I think the federal government needs to act. I think that even with, if the states were to do some of the things that I'm suggesting they call upon them to do, I'm convinced now, especially after reading the GAO report, that there needs to be national action that will create national standards. And there needs to be the kind of investment at the federal level in safety oversight for rail that there are in other areas.
Well, would you accept this as a... I'm just mindful of the clock, because we have a board meeting.
And I'm happy to have this carried over to the board meeting and language.
Yeah, but I think we should act on this. I didn't know you had three.
So do you want to act on either of these right now?
I want to act on all of it.
You want to act on all of it?
I do.
So what
you
want to do
is... Now that I see all of it.
One has already been acted on.
I'm
so there's two more.
Two more.
Yeah, I want to act on the additional two. As far as I'm concerned, okay. I should act.
For the discussion, Ms. Hutchins.
I would like to act on your second one that you've given, because it talks to the immediate relationships that we have and how do we move forward to correct that. And I think that is not as complicated as this. No, that was the other one I deleted.
It's also, as a mechanism, less complicated.
Right.
And I'm just suggesting a letter of intent, which could be crafted.
Right. We can. But I would hope that we would want to think through what we want to say to the federal government about what we believe are critical oversight issues and what we want them to do about it. I'm sure you've thought about that. I think you address it. The question I would ask of myself is, are there other things that we would like? Mr. Graham talks about rail car. I think we want to think broad enough to ensure that whatever is implemented, it is inclusive and it does not simply rise to what we have on our table today, but right. Does it look forward? That's
right.
The only thing that I would be concerned about.
Okay.
So coming back and maybe doing the resolution is not untimely.
Okay, so you would like to go ahead with directing for
yes,
a letter to
the letter to go
along
and
line.
We know we
so the motion would be that the board direct the letter be sent by the chairman
to
the Secretary of Transportation of Virginia, Maryland, and the director in the District of Columbia, encompassing what is on the rest of this page. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Graham, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. And discussion. Mr. Cato.
Yes, so I just want to, first of all, as I mentioned before, I've had involvement at the federal level of recommending additional oversight, and I believe I have briefed the board on that. There is an effort underway by the Secretaries of Transportation of Virginia, Maryland, as well as the Director of Transportation from the District of Columbia concerning this whole matter. And I think your direction is clear, and I support that, but it might also include in working with those three individuals, because I want to make sure we don't have separate directions the agencies or the states are going from this board.
Well, and I hope that, you know, if we send the letter, we'll perhaps open up that dialogue and, you know, perhaps we can move in the same direction as well. So we have a motion before further discussion. Mr. Yule.
Yeah, I like this, but on that first call upon them to take action A, I would add where it says provide for dedicated staffing, I would add provide for dedicated funding and staffing. I mean, the substance is, you know, funding. It's a funding issue. But I'm really concerned that with these budget cuts all on the table, this is a line item that folks will just pull immediately. But even though $150,000 is a small item, but we're stressing, need to stress the importance of not only keeping the main maintaining that $150,000, but hopefully more if they need it.
I'd be happy to include that if there's no objection. Mr. Benjamin.
I'd just like to clarify that I think both Betty and I are supportive of this, but we should note that we do meet with our secretary regularly and do discuss these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be something that goes to our secretary that we, in fact, already have discussed and do continue to discuss. And I'd also like to point out that, as I think Mr. Bassett pointed out, the funding from Maryland is, in fact, part of our comprehensive transportation program, and therefore is money that we do provide every year. That having been said, I don't have any objection to our sending this out in order to make sure that an equivalent thing happens throughout the rest of the region.
All right, question is on the motion on the letter for the states.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. And finally, on the federal matter, we could simply move it to the board with a vote here now, and then, of course, it could be wordsmith if anybody wants to work on there, but that would allow us to
so move on from here.
All right. Moved by Mr. Graham.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Albert to move this resolution onto the board for final action.
Before we do it,
yes.
I would like to note that as written, I like this because it does, in fact, stay very, very broad and doesn't specifically focus on limited areas. And it does, in fact, say we want to be treated the same way as a number of other modes that have fewer passengers and fewer passenger miles because we believe that safety is extremely important, and that is the position of this board. I think this broad treatment, which Mr. Zimmerman put together, is an extremely good one.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Before I announce the vote, was there someone seeking to...
I just had the comment that while I thought it was very important to do this, I did not feel the urgency that no preparation before I really would have wanted to look at it first.
This actually just to move it to the board,
I
and the board may or may not decide to move it today. So that passed unanimously.
I echo that comment. I would have liked to have had a little notice of prep.
And again, I assume we can have a full discussion at the board meeting on it.
That doesn't negate what I can say, but I understand what your response.
We have one action item we didn't take earlier, which is on the minutes of the previous meeting.
So moved.
Second. There's a motion to accept the minutes as presented. Is there any correction discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Mr. Graham, is your desire to begin the board meeting?
Yeah, Mr. Albert, not a meeting. No meeting. Meeting.
Oh, we're going to do that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Here's one. I don't know what he has. He has what he has.
Mr. Cato, Mr. Francis, is there anything that needs to happen in this committee before we adjourn to the next one?
No, Mr. Chairman. In fact, you have the written documents explaining the safety statistics as well as security, and I recommend that we just end the meeting. You have that information. There's nothing of significance I think you need to know.
Thank you very much. In that case, this committee is adjourned.